Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Good afternoon, I'm David Hanson, the opinions editor of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome to On Politics. In this show, we'll be talking with Dan Bice and Mary Spicuzza of the Journal Sentinel staff here in studio, and we'll be joined by Craig Gilbert of our Washington Bureau and Christian Schneider, a columnist for the paper, who are both in Cleveland covering the Republican National Convention. So let's go straight to the headlines. We'll be talking about Donald Trump's speech tonight. How have the Wisconsin Republicans fared so far? Hillary Clinton's recent readings from PolitiFact. A preview of the Democrats' convention in Philadelphia next week. And our winners and losers. But before that, let's first go to a recorded segment with Craig Gilbert in Cleveland. Now we're joined by Craig Gilbert live from Cleveland. Craig, you just finished a press conference with Governor Walker about Ted Cruz's speech last night. Why don't you tell us what he said?
Well, he was guarded in his criticism. I mean, Governor Walker's really been straddling the divide between the pro and anti-Trump people in the party. He's kind of been on both sides of that divide. So it is an awkward issue for him. But he's come out here and he's doing what he describes as honoring the pledge to support Cruz, the pledge that he took actually in this very city. A little less than a year ago at the first Republican debate. And he voted for Cruz and supported Cruz in the Wisconsin primary. He's taken a different tack. He wasn't as pointed in his criticism of Cruz as some other Republicans have been, but between his interviews here and radio interviews he's done, he's basically said that if Cruz wanted to, if Cruz was not going to endorse, the better choice would have been to stay away from the convention like John Kasich did.
So I want to talk about what's at stake for Donald Trump tonight, but we were talking about Ted Cruz last night giving what amounted to a stump speech and then not endorsing and being booed off the stage. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that at a convention. What was Cruz's gamble here?
Well, it is a huge gamble. I mean, I was talking to Congressman Glenn Grossman, who I believe also supported Cruz in the primary, and he said that Cruz is ruining his career because people, Republicans are going to say, if they lose the White House this time around, they're going to say, to look at Cruz and say, you gave us Hillary Clinton. So it's a huge gamble, and even Grossman was suggesting the only way that gamble works out for Cruz is if Trump wins the election and then turns out to be a horrible president, which is not a fate that I don't think Republicans are really rooting for. So the gamble is, the downside, the risk is that he gets blame for a Republican defeat. This is the gamble that all Republican politicians have faced in making the decision whether to withhold their support for Trump or not. And of course, if Trump does become the president, then you're really on the outside looking in your own party. He obviously has presidential ambitions in the long run, Cruz does. And so his gamble is that eventually the party will come around and look, return to sort of its ideological roots, and that Cruz will be kind of the natural person to go to in a post-Trump Republican Party.
Well, what's it also say about the organizers of the convention and Trump himself? I mean, wasn't it a gamble to give Cruz a speaking spot in primetime to begin with?
Yeah, and, you know, Reince Priebus came and talked to the Wisconsin delegates mostly behind closed doors. We caught just the very, very end of that discussion. But what I believe he told delegates was that, you know, they knew that Cruz was going to say what he said for the most part. And, you know, they could have denied him a speaking slot, but that itself would have been very divisive. And so they did what they did. They allowed him to speak. And at the risk of kind of creating the craziness that we saw last night.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about Trump's speech tonight. How much is at stake here for the candidate?
Well, we're going to find out. One of the fascinating things to me about Trump is I've been at rallies in the last month or two with Trump where he's ridiculed the notion that he should become more, quote, presidential, which is kind of an article of faith among many in the party. I mean, this is the moment of any moments to do that. I mean, to try to, a lot of people, a lot of Republicans feel like he's got to reach new voters, he's got to broaden his base, and he can't do that just by being the sort of adversarial, provocative, lightning rod Donald Trump we've all gotten to know in the campaign. But he personally has derided the notion that he needs to make this transformation. So we're going to find out. Certainly it was a signal with the Mike Pence pick in the eyes of conservatives that he was maturing. We're going to find out tonight whether he thinks this is something he needs to do and whether he can do it. I think a lot of Republicans I've talked to would like to see a pivot in that direction.
So there have been some mistakes. The Melania Trump speech was derided for having cribbed part of Michelle Obama's speech from 2008, and there have been some other mishaps. But this has been an unconventional campaign from the start, and it's an unconventional convention. How much do these mistakes matter, do you think?
Well, I think to the degree that they perpetuate kind of a little bit of a sense of anarchy about the campaign, I think they do matter because you really want to put that behind you as Donald Trump. I mean, he really does. Again, he's had lots of opportunities to kind of show sort of what some people would call growth, quote unquote, mm-hmm. in this direction. Even during the primaries, he didn't take them. Whether he takes them now, we don't know. But I think, you know, conventions are supposed to be places where the parties unify, and they're supposed to be places where voters who aren't on board already get some assurance or at least some signal that this is a candidate they could potentially support down the road. Donald Trump, you know, needs to grow his coalition. He's brought some new voters to the party, but as Paul Ryan noted this week, there's also some people leaving the party over Donald Trump. The Republicans right. need that equation to net out in their favor.
Right. Well, Craig Gilbert from Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you.
And now I'm joined by Christian Schneider in Cleveland. Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you guys.
So you made the round of the parties last night. You're up and at 'em here this morning. So I want to get your take on Governor Walker's speech, which my take was it was kind of overshadowed last night by what happened with Ted Cruz. What do you think of Walker's speech?
Well, not only overshadowed by Ted Cruz, it's overshadowed by who the nominee is. I mean, Walker talked a lot about all of his achievements, his accomplishments in Wisconsin, people thinking, you know, he's talking about all those things, maybe gearing up for another a run at the presidency. But, you know, he talks about all the things, his Act 10 and all those other things. And those are the exact things that as soon as Donald Trump got to Wisconsin for the primary, began criticizing Scott Walker for. So in any other year, in any other convention with any other nominee, I think it would actually have been a very good speech. But just given that he's now praising a guy that walked into the state and you know, took the bark off him just a couple months ago, I think, you know, kind of undermines what he's trying to say.
Well, let me ask you about his support for Trump, too. It's tepid, but he's still supporting him.
Right.
What are the risks for Walker in supporting Trump?
Well, I mean, he obviously can be blamed in part for, you know, if this thing completely melts down in a couple of months in November when Republicans lose big. You know, the ads will be out there. Scott Walker, you know, took part in this. He caved in. He capitulated to Donald Trump. Now, with Ted Cruz's speech last night, in 2019, he can be out there and he's like, I'm the one guy that stood firm and didn't endorse. So he's separated himself in that regard.
Dan, let me go to you. What's your take on Walker and how he did?
Well, you know, he was giving the speech at not a particularly good time for him. The Marquette poll last week showed he's at 38% approval rating. His fundraising numbers are not good at all. He's clearly uncomfortable with Trump, but, you know, just about everybody from Wisconsin who's speaking at this event. You had, you know, Paul Ryan, who made one reference to two references to Trump. Ron Johnson had one. And most of their speeches have been anti-Hillary speeches instead of pro-Trump speeches. The interesting thing is with the Marquette poll, it indicates that the race is fairly close here. So there's a very good chance that Trump will be here campaigning and Scott Walker will be called upon to get up on the stage and to
by his side.
Yeah, and have to speak with him, and that's not going to be a comfortable thing for him.
So Walker's ratings now are in the 30s, according to the Marquette poll. Does he help himself with the Wisconsin electorate by showing up at the convention?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, he's doing what he was asked to do. He's doing this because he's a party guy. The convention's been very much focused on trying to keep Republicans together. There's been very little outreach. I mean, Paul Ryan did try to reach out by talking about what Republicans can do and what it can mean for Hispanics and African Americans. But most of this has been, you know, the concern about keeping the Republicans who are in the room together. That's been a hard enough thing to do, as Ted Cruz's speech pointed out.
Yeah. So, Christian, among the Wisconsin Republicans who spoke, there was David Clark, there was Walker, there was Paul Ryan, Ron Johnson. Who do you think did the best job for himself politically?
I think Paul Ryan probably did the best. I was in the hall when he gave his speech. He came out, and there was pretty tepid applause and maybe even a few boos. But by the end of his speech, he did the obligatory Trump mention and then moved on right away to talking about kind of his view of America, his legislative agenda, things like that, and then really closed it down at the end with a strong finish and had people on their feet at the end. So I think it's been a couple nights of pretty boring speeches. So it's saying something to for him to have gotten people up and clapping. So I think he did the best.
And you had the inverse with Sheriff Clark, who comes in to huge applause, probably on Monday night, the biggest applause of anybody up until him. But by the end of his speech, it was pretty tepid. I was kind of underwhelmed. I've been told that he wrote the speech himself, but it looked and sounded to me like a lot of edits. I mean, I've never heard him refer to Hillary Clinton as Hillary Clinton. It's always Mrs. Bill Clinton, the Black Lives Matter movement, and that sort of stuff, and all of that sort of stuff. That you know, sharper rhetoric of his was all gone.
Yeah. I want to return to Governor Walker for just a minute. We talked about his approval ratings. He has said that he won't run for president in 2020. If he decides to run for governor in 2018, he said it was just too hard to do both, to run the state and to run for president. Can he even consider a run with approval ratings in the high 30s?
I mean, he's going to continue to talk about it. I mean, the more surprising thing to me was how they had $161,000 in the bank. There are senators with more money than that. There are lots of people with more money than that. He has to convince people that he's really going to run again, because he has to say that he's running so he's not seen as a lame duck. But I think most people right now aren't convinced he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Christian, how about you? What does Governor Walker need to rehabilitate his image here in the state so he's viable in 2018 or 2020?
Well, if he's tied to the Trump train and it goes down big time, that's not going to help either. And that's why, you know, all along I thought there really was no political downside to kind of staying away from Trump all along. And I think they could have done it. And you see that Ted Cruz did it, and I think this puts him ahead of everybody else in the next couple of years. But, you know, Walker's got to get back. He's got to pass stuff people like. I mean, that's what politics gets down to. Do things that people like and want you to do. So, you know, he's just got to be seen. He's, you know, ever since the presidential campaign, he's kind of had a low profile. He just needs to get out there, tour the state, and, you know, get people to know him again, I think.
All right. We're going to go now to a segment with Tom Kircher of our PolitiFact team. I'm joined now by Tom Kircher of the Journal Sentinel's PolitiFact team. And Tom, we're going to go over a few of the recent readings on the Truthometer as a way to look at the Democrats' convention coming up. So the first one is, this is for Hillary Clinton, I should add.
Right.
The first one is Hillary Clinton said, independent analysts say, Donald Trump would add $30 trillion to the national debt, and you rated that half true. Why?
Right. There was one independent analysis that used that figure, but Clinton failed to say that that's over a 20-year period, and there were also other independent analyses that put the figure lower than $30 trillion.
Lower than that. So it could be $30 trillion, but it's over a long period of time. Okay. The next one is Donald Trump wants to get rid of the federal minimum wage, and you rated that true.
Yeah, that's correct. He has said that he thinks the minimum wage should be higher, but he doesn't think the federal government should set one, and that should be left to the states.
Okay. So let's move on to our third reading on the Truth-O-Meter for Hillary Clinton. She says she never received nor sent any material that was marked classified on her private email server while Secretary of State, and you rated that false.
Yeah, she used some pretty stark words there, never and any, and the FBI investigation found that that's just not true. There were a small number of emails that were classified, including two that were marked classified right when they were sent.
At the time they were sent. She has claimed also, I think, that some of them were marked classified later, but you're saying there were at least a couple that were not. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. She says, Donald Trump's proposed tax treatment of hedge fund managers makes the current loophole even worse. And you rated that true.
And under his tax plan, he would reduce the income tax rate for business enterprises that hedge fund managers use when they file taxes. The upshot would be they would be better off tax-wise under his plan.
Okay, and yet he has said that he wants the rich to pay more. So not necessarily true in this case. So let's go to our final statement by Hillary Clinton. After Britain's vote to leave the European Union, within 24 hours, Americans lost $100 billion from our 401ks, and you rated that mostly true.
Yeah, the experts told us that that was a reasonable figure. Her estimate was reasonable. But it's important to remember that that's not a permanent loss.
It's paper loss.
Yeah, 401k investments are meant to be long-term. So while that initial loss, that figure was accurate, over the long term, it wouldn't necessarily be that much.
And, in fact, the markets have come back quite a bit since
then. No doubt, within days, right?
All right, Tom Kircher of the Journal Sentinel's PolitiFact team, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
I'm joined by Mary Spicuzza of the Journal Sentinel staff, and I'm back with Dan Bice. Mary, let me turn to you first. After the disunion at the Republican convention this week, what do you think Democrats need to do in Philadelphia next week?
I think they kind of have their map of what not to do from this week, so maybe avoid ugly floor fights that lead to chanting. Maybe try to not have a Ted Cruz-like speaker who drops a bomb and, basically.
Well, they do have Bernie Sanders, but he's on night one, which might be a better place for him.
And you want
to already endorsed, so I think.
And he has endorsed.
I think the more concern for him is Bernie supporters who might be there. Will they really be able to quietly sit and back Hillary, or will there be some kind of fighting on the floor? A lot of them have not moved on. So that's probably a concern. And then also I think they want to seem excited about their candidate, not just saying she's not as bad as Trump, which is kind of has been the approach this week that a lot of Republicans have taken. So I think all of those things would probably be a good start.
I think that's a lukewarm support for him by the establishment. And the way they've been able to come to terms with the Trump candidacy is to say, well, at least he's not Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's Scott Walker's approach, Paul Ryan's approach. It seems to be Ron Johnson's approach, too. So you also want to have the delegates in their seats. I don't know how many times you see the hallway just seems fairly empty, even for some of these major speeches.
Mm-hmm. So speakers who could say her name more than once or twice might help.
Well, and what I've noticed at the GOP convention so far, at least, is that there isn't much Mike Pence, I think, made a joke last night.
Yeah,
it was the first one I've heard.
That's what I've said. The tone has been not good.
Dismal.
The tone has been angry and just sort of unresolved and humorless. And, I think Obviously, it's an advantage to the Democrats that they get to go second. But, you know, one thing we do need to remember, the fourth night of the convention is the big night, and whatever happens tonight tends to overshadow whatever happens the first three nights. So maybe everything turns around, everyone's hugging, and it's a wonderful night tonight.
The speech tonight is really ballgame in a lot of ways. So let me ask you this, Mary. Do the Democrats run the same risk, though, by making Donald Trump the center of their convention? I mean, it's possible they have really made him the center of the campaign in a lot of ways. Isn't there a risk of them coming off as pretty negative?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that there are Bernie supporters who have said they're not voting for Hillary, and they've been trying to say, you know, if you do that, you're helping Donald Trump win. I think you just have to be careful with that message because, again, you want to seem like you're for your candidate and not just against the other guy.
But the crowd's going to be full of people who really, really dislike Trump. So it's going to be hard to avoid some of these lines criticizing because there will be minorities there. There will be women there. There will be a lot of people that he's attacked in the past. So it's going to be hard not to say Donald Trump's name as many times as they can during the convention.
Oh, wonderful. You're lock him up?
I don't think lock him up. I think people
you don't want him to be president. Yeah, right. Probably firing references. And hopefully they won't lift any passages of their speeches, which will help, too, because that's...
Well, and I read a story on tonight's speech by Donald Trump that they are working very hard to make sure there isn't anything lifted in that speech, as they should.
Right. You know, it is sort of funny, too, because Trump has... In most of these conventions, the candidates like the bride, where you don't see them until at the last. But Trump keeps on popping out from time to time.
Every night.
Right. And he's there, particularly when Cruz, he knew Cruz's speech, and he knew it was what was going to happen. And then he pops out at that moment. I mean, it's just funny. It's like, and then when Pence speaks, he's right out there to... And I was afraid he was going to grab the microphone and take the whole thing from him. I don't think
it's almost
you're
like he's used to being on TV and things revolving around him.
Right. I thought he was going to say you're fired to Ted Cruz last night as he came out. So back to the Democrats for just a minute. What prominent Wisconsin Democrats are we likely to see at the convention?
I think that obviously Marie Hamilton, Dontre Hamilton's mother, will be there. Gwen Moore is expected to be there. I think that I would not be surprised. I haven't confirmed it. Barrett will be there, I would assume. I haven't talked to him, so maybe that's a guess.
Yes. Yeah, he'll be there.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess track him down, and they're still announcing speakers over the next few days.
Russ Feingold said he wasn't planning to go, but just like with Ron Johnson,
that could change.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that he ended up being added to the list just at the last second. So
I think Tammy will be there.
Yeah, I assume she would be.
All right, well, let's leave it there and move on to winners and losers for this week. Mary, let me turn to you first. Who's your winner?
I would say Michelle Obama. So Melania Trump or her speechwriter or whoever lifted the passages of Michelle Obama's speech, it was very well received. By Republicans until they realized it was Michelle Obama's lines. So, meanwhile,
it was such a good speech.
She got big applause 8 years ago and again. But, you know, it obviously was really well received until the whole plagiarism questions came to light. Meanwhile, she's off doing carpool karaoke and singing along to Beyonce, so she seems to be riding pretty high this week.
And the worst defense of the plagiarism stuff? I mean, you pointed this out. Chris Christie saying 93% of the speech was original.
Only 7% was lifted.
They took only 7% of the stuff from the store. That's
right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with hundreds of journalists gathered in Cleveland covering the speech, who breaks it? Apparently, a laid-off TV journalist watching from a LA Starbucks who notices the line and starts Googling. So, a win for unemployed.
Interior designer.
Who may? I'm still waiting to hear when he gets a job offer.
Right,
Maybe he'll come out a winner too.
And your loser.
I would have to say Reince Priebus. It has not been the messy, contested convention that it could be, but it certainly has not gone smoothly. There was the delegate fight on the floor the first day within you know, what, a few hours of him gaveling it in, the, you know, Melania's well-received speech then becoming a plagiarism story that went on and on and on with kind of botched response.
Three days,
three news cycles, everything from Twilight Sparkle from My Little Pony being used to the My Little Pony defense. Right. It's been pretty messy. And then, you know, Ted Cruz kind of dropping the bomb last night. So I would not say that this has been probably a very easy week for rights.
Well, the whole idea that Ted Cruz, one, was there, but two, was in prime time on night three when you could have buried him on night one at 6 o'clock, you know, if you're going to have him.
It sounds like people were trying to get him to change his mind up until pretty late, so maybe they thought he'd come around.
And also, what was supposed to be a 12-minute speech becomes a 21-minute speech, and Mike Pence gets cut off at 10 o'clock midway through his speech. So, yeah, this is not the way it was supposed to go.
That has been a week.
Dan, you're a
loser. I'm choosing non-convention stuff. My loser, while the Republican Party's having its own problems, its major outlet, Fox News, is going through major problems right now with Roger Ailes supposedly going to be stepping down, maybe be a consultant for Fox News, but all of this is a result of allegations that he's been sexually harassing some of the staff. I think New York Times story said that there are six women now who are accusing him of sexually harassing them. And, you know, this is Roger Ailes has been Fox News. I mean, everything about it is tied to him. He's the founder. He's the leader. And, you know, the Rupert Murdoch's two sons are now the ones deciding the direction of the state of the network.
And your winner.
This is actually something Mary wrote about, Silk, the strip club that once a downtown club. They've been fighting the city forever, and the city's now decided to pay, it's close to $1 million in legal fees to the owner of Silk. It's just been this ongoing battle, and now the owner of Silk says that he wants to reapply to get a place downtown.
Dan, thanks. Mary, thanks for being with us. I also want to thank Craig Gilbert and Christian Schneider in Cleveland. And thanks to all of you for joining us for this edition of On Politics.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.